Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of the Endless Spiral Podcast. I am, as always, your host, Keith Russell. This is the mental health show where I speak to everyone and anyone with a story to tell, as long as getting some tips and advice from experts in their chosen fields. On this particular episode, I'm delighted to say that we've finally been able to get Dara Fleming on the podcast. Dara is a freelance writer. He's an author. He's a mental health blogger and he's a poet as well. And he has a new book coming out soon called Thoughts Too Big. So we're going to have a chat with him about that as well. We'll have a chat with him about his own story and everything and anything else that comes up as well. So Dara, we've finally been able to organise this date. How are you?
I know. It's a long time coming. No, I'm good. And as I said to you before, I really appreciate you having us on. The podcast helps so many people. So hopefully we can do something similar today.
Yeah, exactly. And you're very welcome. Right. So as we said, look, we'll get to the book and you've got loads of writing stuff. And oh, your blog. I forgot the name, the blog.
So the blog is Thoughts Too Big and the book's going to be called Lonely Boy.
Sorry. Yeah, I knew that. I knew as soon as I said it, I hadn't got that right.
You're all right. You won't hold it against you.
Yeah. I knew as soon as I said that I wasn't right. But maybe we'll go through your story first, if it's all right with you. And we give kind of the listeners a bit of an insight into your own story.
100%. So my story kind of started, 10 years ago this year, only last month, my best friend killed himself when I was 17. He was 18. So obviously that's, you know, for anyone is a traumatic experience. And that kind of set me on a path to where I am today, where I, you know, struggle with grief. Then that kind of spiral into depression, a lot of emotional numbness. I was I couldn't really feel anything for years and years. And because of that, I didn't know there was a problem because I didn't feel the fact that there was a problem. I just couldn't feel anything. But eventually it kind of came to a head when I was in college in second year, when I was about 20 years old, just had a panic attack on the street on a night out. And then the following day, it was the first time I was like, I need to go seek help. Which I did, started my first stint with counseling and therapy. And then on the back of that, once I got through the first stint and I was in a better place, that's when I started the blog, which initially was Thoughts Too Big for Twitter because you can only put 140 characters on Twitter and I couldn't microblog.
Very good.
So, but then for legal reasons or whatever, I just shortened it to Thoughts Too Big because I didn't want Twitter coming after me. Yeah. So, and that's where the blog started. And now the blog is just a kind of, you know, daily mental health struggles, whatever's happened to me during the week in terms of anxiety or mental lows. I'll just talk about that. And the idea behind it is just to normalize the chat. Same with your podcast, normalize the chat around mental health issues. So that's.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was on it myself earlier on and you've got loads of stuff up there as well. If we just go back a little bit, because you said you had a panic attack and then the next day you went for help. That's seriously, you know, quick to go for help. I'm praising you for that because, as you know yourself, so many men don't go for help and they stay silent and they let things linger and, you know, it does them no harm. But you were able to, I suppose, to realize there was something wrong straight away. I mean, had you ever kind of experienced any mental health issues before that?
I think after Irby died and I thought I was grieving for a long time and I was obviously, but it just stayed so long that I just thought that's how my life was going to be. But I was actually just depressed for a long time. And I think I knew that, but I was just ignoring the problem. This is something I address in the book as well, where I was just, the problem was there and I was just pushing it away. I was like, I don't want to deal with it. So I knew there was something wrong. And then the panic attack was kind of all of that coming to a head where I was just all the stuff I was pushing down just kind of exploded. And I was very lucky in a sense because I did applied psychology as my undergrad. So all my peers in college were very open to therapy and mental health. And I just started talking to them about it. I was like, is there anything I can do? And they're like, just go to counseling in university. It was just a very matter of fact, oh yeah, just go to counseling. There's no problem. It's there to be used. And that, I think that really, really made it easier for me that I was just they didn't make a big deal about it. And then the next step, I think, because I talked to them probably so I say I had the panic attack on a Wednesday talked to them on the Thursday. And then the big day for me was telling my parents, which I was like, okay, I have to do this at dinner or something. Cause I just had this idea that they would have thought less of me or whatever. But again, that's the classic anxiety thing where what I thought was going to happen wasn't true at all. They were super supportive and they were right there for me. Like, so, but that was the big kind of mountain for me to get up, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did you feel when you were actually able to talk to them about it?
Oh, like it was such a, I always say this to people as well, like the decision to go to therapy was almost the most beneficial part, and to be able to tell people, because it's just such a relief that you don't have to keep like pretending that everything's fine. You're just like, oh, okay, now I can just, like, it's all uphill from here now. You know, it's all going to, which is great. But yeah, I think it was just a huge sense of relief. And that's what, like, it's just, and since then, like, and you know yourself, like, it's just, like, whenever people are like struggling, even if it's small things or if they need to like grow as a person, I'm just like, just go to therapy. It's not a big deal. Just go to talk to someone. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly it. And you kind of touched on it yourself there. It's the stigma as well, isn't it? I mean, especially with guys or men or whatever you want to call it, you know, the stigma is massive, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And like, I think a part of the reason men's mental health stigma is we self-stigmatize. Like my thing was like, My parents are going to think badly about me. Like I was already stigmatizing myself and it just wasn't true. And then, you know, as I got older and I was talking more about mental health, I was just like, there's no reason for the mental health stigma to be there if we all just admit that we don't always feel good. Yeah. And that's kind of the pitfall of social media, where we're like bombarded with people saying they're always happy and they're always X, Y, and Z and my life's perfect. And it's like, none of us are always perfect. Like, so we can just admit that and it'll be fine.
Yeah, this is it. Now, I was kind of lucky when I was growing up, there wasn't social media. So I didn't have all of that in my face every day. I can only imagine what it would have been like. You know, I disliked myself so much. I can only imagine how I would have felt having to look at social media every day at the time.
Yeah. Do you reckon it would have been like a lot worse for you if social media was around?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I wasn't in a good mental state. I didn't have the tools to cope with stuff. I can only imagine how I would have been around, you know, how I would have been with social media around. I don't think it would have been a good outcome. I don't know. I mean, I'm only guessing. But I mean, just like going back to what you were saying about when you went to your friends in college, and the fact that they were able to normalize it straight away for you was absolutely brilliant, wasn't it?
Huge. Like, and I always say this, like, no matter what I've been through or whatever, I've been so lucky and privileged to always have like a really strong support system around me. And that's been like I can't imagine what it would have went if I didn't have that, if I didn't feel like I could open up to people, you know. And so not everyone has that, like, so I'm aware of the fact that it's very, like, I'm very grateful for it. But the fact that they just made it, like, because it was a big thing for me to say to them, and they're like, oh yeah, it's no problem, don't worry, like, it's all good, like. And I was like, okay, that's fine.
So you said you were kind of feeling depressed for quite a long time. Give us like a regular day or a normal day for you when you were feeling like that.
Yeah, like, I think because I always like, when I was in that state, I always did this thing where I was like, I will just ignore this pain and by being productive. So I was always like trying to do too much. So in school, I was like, because when it started, I was in school and college, like, I was always just trying to do as much college work as I could or work out as much as possible. So like from the outside looking in, it looked like I was just kind of flourishing and I was just being really, really productive, but I was only being productive so I didn't have to like sit with my thoughts, because my thoughts were very like negative towards myself and like I resented myself. And then there was this other element for me where like I couldn't really feel emotions. So like if something good happened to me, I didn't get excited about it, or I didn't get like happy, or if something bad happened to me, it was just like, if I got bad news, it just wouldn't register. It would just be like, okay, whatever. And what I started doing was, and it's only like looking back on it now that I can see this, like I started like acting out the emotions. So it would be like, if something good happened to me, I wouldn't feel anything, but I'd know people would want me to see me happy. Like that would be the natural reaction. So I'd just be like, oh yeah, I'm delighted, whatever. But absolutely nothing going on. So it wasn't so much like a classic like depression where I was, you know, like very, very low mood. It was just, I was feeling nothing. Like it was just like there was nothing inside. And that was, again, because I couldn't feel anything, it didn't feel like a problem for ages. And it was only when I realized like, oh, you're actually like meant to enjoy things and you're meant to have these emotional reactions. I was like, there's something wrong here. Like, and that's when, or in and around the time the panic attack happened, and I was like, we need to figure this out. And that's like still to this day something I, because it's an ongoing thing, as you know, like with any mental health issue, like I still have to work on that, because if I let it kind of go without being any attention, then it starts coming back where I'm not really feeling any emotion again. It's just a constant struggle with it.
You're like wearing a mask, but it's amazing when you say that how many times I've heard that. I did the same. Nearly everyone I've spoken to, they all say the same thing. They were like, when it comes to depression and stuff, they were wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. You know, like you try not to let it show, but on the inside, or as you said, you know, you just felt nothing. When I went for counseling for depression in my kind of mid-20s, it was one of the very first sessions I had. It might have even been the first one. And I remember using a term to describe myself was a walking corpse. I'll never forget it. That's how I described myself. I was like a walking corpse. There was nothing inside, nothing, absolutely nothing.
And like, that's such a heavy thing to have to hear yourself say about yourself, but it was probably accurate in terms of how you were feeling. Like, so it's,
that's exactly what it was. So you said like you were working out. I mean, and I know we're saying it was kind of avoidance, but I suppose it helped you get through things as well, really.
Absolutely. And like, it's something I'm always outspoken about, like, because I'm not really into this like fitness for the sake of looking a certain way or exercise for the sake of, but I'm like, exercise, like I can't say if it did or not, but like, it, I feel like it saved my life, because I was always very much into sport and basketball. And it's like, if I didn't have that and I wasn't exercising, I feel like my like mental health would have been way worse than it was, and it wasn't good to begin with. So like that really, and it was just a kind of, because I was conditioned from like, because I was very into sport growing up and like just a good work ethic in my family, I was conditioned to like, no matter what's going on, I'm going to exercise. So even if I was feeling like shit, I was like, I'm still going to go work out. And that was really helpful, because it like, it just kept at a level where I wasn't like steeping into like dangerous territory ever, you know?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I spoke to Hannah Tyrrell on the podcast and she said exactly the same. She was so low, but if she didn't have sports, she doesn't know what she would have done, because it kept her going. And I was exactly so the first blog I wrote was how I use sport as an escapism. Now, for me, it was watching sport, but it was also playing sport when I was younger. You have to have something. But like, it's what you were saying there about kind of you're kind of exercising for the right reasons, which is obviously, if you're familiar with my story, which probably everyone is at this stage, I never stop going on about it. But I used to exercise for the wrong reasons. So I used to exercise to affect how I looked. At least now I try now and exercise to affect how I feel, which has been massive for me. And you know, that's the message I try and get across now as well, is look, there's no point doing things from the neck down. Okay, yes, that's great, but you have to work on the neck up, you know, because they go like hand in hand.
Yeah, and I think that's the point that's missed, because physical health and like mental health are like seen as separate, but they're like so intertwined. And a lot of the exercise I do for myself now is like 90% of it is for my head. Like, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, it's keeping me from putting on weight or whatever, but also it's like the endorphins and the serotonin after a run or whatever, that like, that's the reason I'm doing it. Like,
I was having, actually at the weekend, I had a couple of days, and I haven't actually said this to anybody, so you're hearing this for the first time, but at the weekend, so on Saturday and Sunday, I was feeling really low. I just wasn't in a good mental space. I just didn't feel great, because you know yourself, it comes and goes.
Yeah.
And I felt really, really bad, and I had injured my back, so I haven't been able to do much, which is probably hasn't helped. But anyway, so on Sunday I did some housework, just because I'm not able to run on the treadmill.
I'm not able to,
because of my back. So I did some housework, And I felt so much better after. I mean, I did a lot. I mean, like, and I was like, sweat was dripping off me doing it. Like, I did a lot of housework.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, like, because I spoke to a couple of nutritionists on the podcast, and they always hate me using the word exercise. They like to use the word movement, mm-hmm. because they said the word exercise can have can be kind of a negative effect on some people. So they yeah. like to use the word movement.
Yeah.
So that's what I did on Sunday. I did movement. Mm-hmm. It can be anything. But I felt so much better after doing it. Now,
the term exercise, what you're saying, it's interesting. Like, it's probably a bit narrow. Like, it's like a very specific set of movement. Whereas, like, movement in general, it could be anything. Like, so that's
exactly what it is. So, like I did housework and I'm moving. Do you know what I mean? But I felt so much better, and I couldn't believe it. Because you know, like you hear so many people and they tell you these things. And you kind of like, oh, really? But yeah. Genuine, like as you said about the endorphins a few minutes ago, it genuinely does work, you know?
But like, I feel like, and this is probably true for you as well, like a few years ago, I probably wouldn't have been in the space where I'd be like, you know, like I wouldn't have seen exercise or movement as like a way to affect my mental health or to bring it up. And now it's just like, okay, I know this is going to help me. Even if I don't want to do it this minute, I know it's going to be like beneficial at some point today.
Yeah, yeah, but you're able to process that now because you've gone for your therapy and you've been able to sort out your thought process, and you've been able to work on your mental health. Do you know what I mean? So that's why you're able to do that now. I mean, because I'm exactly the same. If I wasn't able to, as I always say, if I didn't have a good relationship with myself, I wouldn't be able to have a good relationship with food and exercise or not, you know.
Yeah,
all that type 100%. Of stuff. But right. So when did the writing start? I mean, I presume the writing for you can be so cathartic as well, because obviously, you know, you're doing your blog and you're saying, you know, you blog on different mental health topics. So when did that all start for you?
So the blog started at the end of my undergrad, which would have been, I was about 21, so about 6 or 7 years ago. But like, writing for me has always just been a thing that I loved. Like, read a lot growing up. I remember, like, when my mother still tells me this to this day, where I wrote some poem or something when I was really young, and she said at that point, she's like, you're going to be a writer when you're older. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And here we are. But so the fiction and stuff, like writing short fiction, I started doing that like seriously when I was supposed to be writing my thesis for my master's. So it was essentially an exercise in procrastination. I was just like, I don't want to do the work I should be doing. So I started writing short stories. And then eventually I had enough of them together that I was like, this could be a book. But I didn't really think it could be a book because I wasn't really writing for that reason. But it was only like, first I read Blind Boy's first book, which is a collection of short stories. And because like a lot of my initial short stories are quite like fantastical and crazy things happen and stuff. And I was like, oh, if he can get his done, like they're kind of similar in team to mine. So then, and another one of my friends said, just try it. So I just kind of put the manuscript out there to people and got lucky with it. And I did two books with that publisher. They're both like fiction. So it started when I was like getting serious, I suppose, about writing. I was 23, so that was about 4 years ago. I did the two books of short stories, and now the new book is like a book of like, it's on mental health, it's nonfiction, it's about what I've been through in terms of mental health and what I've learned and how I've like, you know, applied the learnings to like hopefully have better mental health going forward. So it's a very different direction for my writing, but I just love writing, so it's easy for me in that sense. Yeah.
And it's called Lonely Boy.
Lonely Boy. So yeah, so Book Up Publishing picked it up. Susan McKenna is my new author rep. And just like, I met them in Limerick probably like a month ago at this point, and just so lovely, like, which is a kind of different, and it's absolutely no shade to my old publisher because they're based in LA, but I just never met them.
Yeah.
They were just, it was all online. So it was just really nice to meet them and get a feel for who they were. And it was just, it feels really positive. It's kind of like a community of like, because they do a lot of mental health books. So yeah, it's just looking forward to getting it done.
Yeah, yeah. And we obviously chatted before we started recording. We mentioned the Mental Health for Millennials series that they do, which as you were saying, that my co-host on my other podcast, the Waffle Box podcast, is Chris Sherlock, and he wrote a chapter for that. So we better give him a bit of a plug.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, he raves about the guys at Book Club Publishing, and he says that they're so nice and they're really, really great. So we'll give them a plug as well. I wanted to ask you, when did you win? You won an award for a short story in Cork Arts, something, didn't you?
That's right, yeah, fair play. It was like the Cork Arts from the Well short story competition. I entered probably like, it was funny, I entered a story I'd been working on for a while around this time last year. And because just like with writing and stuff, and I'm very poor at tracking my like submissions, I completely forgot I submitted it.
All right, okay.
And then they got back to me during the summer and they're like, "You've been shortlisted for this." And I was like, "Shortlisted for what?" And then they're like, and then a few weeks later, like, "Oh, your story actually won." And I was like,
"Wow,
this is madness." Like, but like, and I think that's the thing a lot of writers will like, I suppose, relate to, is like, you get rejected a lot as a writer. Like, rejections come constantly. It's just like 90% of the things you put out just get rejected. So like, no matter how far along in your career you are, every acceptance is amazing. And then for it to win like a competition or something is just an extra bonus. It's just, it was great. And yeah, that book was kind of, I think, so the top 10 stories that they shortlisted, or was it 13 stories? I think it was 13. They did like an anthology of short stories. So that came out just before Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I had Lizzie Shorthall on the podcast, and she was saying the same thing as you. You know, like, just the rejection, I suppose, can be a little hard at the beginning, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you suppose, I'm not going to say you get used to it, but I suppose you learn to maybe accept it a little bit better. It's just part of it, you know?
Yeah, it's like anything else. I think it changed for me was when I stopped taking rejection personally, because it was just part of the industry. It's like,
yeah,
I just think of it like as applying for a job. Like, I never take a job application personally, you know. It is what it is. And it's the same thing. But if you take it personally, I feel like you're going to stop writing more quickly, because it's going to be too much like emotional hurt from the rejection. So
yeah,
I think the key thing is to just don't take it personally.
Yeah, yeah. I was listening to an interview with an author this morning on TV. I can't remember her name, but she was saying, like, you know, they're not rejecting you. They're just rejecting the work or the submission. But sure, it could be for marketing reasons. It can be for any reason. So, like, it's, you know, they're not rejecting 100%. You personally, because you probably never even met it. So,
yeah, exactly. You know? Like, I think Claire Hennessy was talking about that on Twitter earlier, so it might have been her, but it was the same sentiment. Like, it's never about like you as a person. It's just there's a whole bunch of things going on, and they're also getting thousands of submissions. So it's just like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So which do you prefer? Do you prefer doing the nonfiction? Do you prefer doing the kind of the short stories where they are fiction, or?
Yeah, like a lot of them are. It's different because I guess like in terms of like the new book Lonely Boy, because it's about like a lot about the stuff I've been through, it was kind of it was quicker to write because I was just writing from memory about what I did. But
yeah,
with short fiction and just fiction in general, because you're making things up and you have to be creative, it takes longer to like get to the finished product. But I do enjoy that, like the accomplishment of being like, okay, I've thought of something and I can put it together, and you use your language differently. So I think like the nonfiction stuff comes more naturally to me, but I do really enjoy the challenge of like fiction. So it's just, I have love for both, but they're two very different things, you know?
Yeah. And was it therapeutic actually writing a book for yourself, you know, just getting stuff off your chest?
Absolutely. And I've been saying this as I was writing it, and I sent it out to Connor Stone from A Mental Health Journey, just like when I got the first draft. And I think like there was stuff I hadn't dealt with in the past that when I was writing this book, I like finally actually dealt with and understood why things were happening. So like, even if the book never got published, I think that was just a worthwhile thing for me to do, to write it all down, because it's essentially like just a organized journaling session is what the book is like.
Yeah.
And that's always been really important for me for my own mental health, is journaling and writing down how I'm feeling. So
yeah,
it was so, so therapeutic and just worthwhile even before it's published. Like,
yeah, exactly, exactly. Do you do anything else other than writing for your, you know, for your kind of mental state? Like, would you try mindfulness or anything like that? Or is writing mindfulness to you?
Well, writing is mindful for me, and it's definitely, if I'm feeling, you know, my mental health is slipping, then I'll go to writing. But other than that, as we said, I use exercise or movement. I always talk about mental health routines. So I have like exercising. I meditate quite a lot. I meditate in the morning, maybe like 10, 15 minutes, just, you know, and that's mindfulness, just sitting and, you know, being with your emotions or whatever. And then other things, like things of, you know, they're not the sexiest, you know, things for that people like talk about, but I mean, just getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, eating the right food, seeing my friends, you know, as often as I can, all these things, you know, they're the mundane things, but they really, really affect my mental health. And I think, you know, people probably overlook them because they're just part of life. Like, oh, sleep doesn't affect your mental health, we have to sleep. But it's like, no, it's pretty important, you know?
Yeah, they can be your non-negotiables.
Exactly, non-negotiables. So, and like, I've been very outspoken about water and water consumption for the past few years. Just like, because I used to, so when I was growing up, I used to faint all the time. Like, I'd say
same
I
fainted here. Like,
really? Okay. Like,
have you not been listening to the Waffle Box podcast? Shame on you. Shame on you. Go on.
I don't get to listen to all of them, but I listened to one with Lizzie, to be fair. But yeah, I used to faint all the time. And it was because I was dehydrated all the time and I didn't realize it. So since then, I've just been like, it stopped me from fainting, and it, you know, it's better for my mental health to drink more water. So I just don't show up with water in my friend's name.
On the Waffle Box podcast I do with Chris, we have this thing where every episode I have a new fainting story. So you should go back and have a listen.
Yeah, 100%. Some of them are common, clearly.
Yeah, some of them are just completely random. Now, maybe a couple of them are probably due to, you know, water and that, but most of them are due to needles.
You can probably
put two and two together on that one. Right, we're nearly there. What's your plans for 2022?
So plans at the moment, like before Christmas, I went traveling for 2 months. I quit like my full-time job, say. When traveling, now I'm working like full-time writing, so I'm doing a lot of like freelance work, so continue to build that client base. Obviously the book's coming out in, it should be before Christmas, so there's just a lot of work to do with that in terms of editing, getting the manuscript cleaned up, and get the cover done and all that kind of stuff that goes with a book. I have a chapbook, so like a small collection of poetry coming out in the next month with Bottle Cap Press. So that's another thing I'll have to do a promo run for. And then other than that, I guess I'm not preparing at all, but my brother is doing the Kerryweigh Ultra Marathon in September. So it's like a 200 kilometer run or something.
Yeah.
So he's preparing for that, but I'm going to be like supporting his like race or something. Cause it's like, you have like 36 hours to run it and it's just absolute madness, and I could never see myself ever doing it. So you know, I'll have to support him doing that. So,
but when you say support him, you're just gonna stand on the sideline.
Yeah, and give him some water.
I knew you were gonna say that.
That's all I could do, you know. That's all I can do.
Exactly. Well done.
There's a few bits going on. It's exciting.
Yeah. Right. Before we let you go, have you anything you want to add before we let you go?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I suppose we touched on a lot, just, you know, to get men to talk more about how they're feeling, especially I feel like we're in a society that's reluctant to hear men's voices sometimes, and I think it's important, like people like yourself, people like Keith Walsh, you had on, just keep talking about things, and I think eventually we'll get to a place where all men can talk about it, and that'll be a job done. You know, you and Keith and myself might be out of the job if that happens, but it's a worthwhile endeavor, you know.
Exactly. Look, and I'm glad you said that, because I actually had men's mental health written down. We just didn't get to it, but I'm glad that you've brought it up and you've said that, because there is a bit of a stigma when it comes to men. As you said, hopefully by us having these conversations, and the more people have the conversations, the better. But we'll get there eventually. We'll get there. I actually think it is getting better now, to be honest. I think certain 100%. Things aren't, certain topics aren't, but some are. Do you know what I mean? And look,
We're moving in the right direction. I think that's the most important thing. We'll figure out all the details as they come, but we're getting there.
No, exactly. Exactly. I completely agree. Right, let's do a few plugs before we go. And don't worry, I'll be putting all this stuff in the description of the podcast. And if I pop this up on YouTube, I'll put all of the links in there as well. So your blog, Thoughts Too Big. I've actually got this right. Your blog, Thoughts Too Big. What's the URL for that?
ThoughtsToBig.ie, keeping it Irish, which is nice.
Lovely.
And they're on, it's on at Thoughts Too, like the number two, big on Instagram. And then my own pages are just at Dara Fleming. So pretty easy.
Yeah, cool. You're on Twitter as well, obviously, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you said you had some poetry coming out soon.
Don't have a set date yet, but the book is called Notes for a Mid-Youth Crisis with Bottle Cap Press, and it's coming out in the next month. I'll have dates soon, hopefully.
Brilliant. Okay, cool. And the book Lonely Boy, you said that's coming out towards the end of the year, isn't it?
Lonely Boy is coming out before Christmas anyway. All things going well.
Brilliant. Okay, awesome. Cool. Well, we finally got a chance to do this, Dara. Thanks very much for coming on for a chat. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Right, guys, I think we'll wrap that up and we'll let Dara get on with his day. Thanks very much, guys, for listening. And we'll be back again very soon with another episode of the Endless Spiral Podcast. Bye for now.